In a world shaped by yesterday's meaning into tomorrow, we find ourselves weaving possibilities in an endless constellation of opportunities. Suspended in the big blue, we find ourselves in the shared moment, with a question on our lips and a desire in our hearts, where lifestyle, business, consciousness share the same office space as your purpose and your brand. Welcome to the Supernova Podcast, a never-ending chronicle, a narrative, really, designed to usher in Big Bang shebangs and a whole lot more glimmer. Here's to that space-time continuum, fellow astronaut, or dare I say, supernova. Here's to leaning in. Let's get astronomical. Let's shift the needle into flow. Jeff, welcome to the Supernova Podcast, and it's so great to have you here on Sustainable Brands.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here. Thanks.
I'm actually glad that I went to some of your talks, and then there's a part of me going, ooh, you've raised the bar. Like, I wish I didn't know. Like, I came into this space with this curiosity and also this vulnerability because you are asking such a beautiful big question, but it's exactly the question we need to be asking. So I just...
Yeah, I worked for about 4.5 years with big companies for an organization called Sustainability, Big S, Big A, based in London, a consultancy and think tank. And many of the companies I was working with were trying to do good.
Yes.
And were struggling to understand exactly what it was they needed to do and what they needed to aim for.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, there must be an answer to this question. What is a truly sustainable business? Mm-hmm. And however hard I looked, I couldn't actually find one. So I thought, yeah, I'd go off and try and answer it. Fool that I was. I thought it would be easy. 3.5 years on, my hair, remaining hair is a lot grayer. And but we're getting somewhere now. I think we do have something that starting to really resonate with companies. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's ambitious, but I think... a lot of the companies I've been talking to, even though it really raises the bar, at least they know where the bar is now.
Yes. I think that's a very good distinction. Because we've been trying to do the sustainability thing without actually understanding what it is. Or we've been holding it in context, and definitions are so important. You've also been talking about metrics as well in that. And with our definition, metrics are kind of embedded into the concept. And now at least we have something that we can actually almost tangibly see or really plug into that actually makes sense.
Yeah, I think the way it would be lovely if we lived in a world where all business decisions were taken on moral grounds. What's right for society?
Yes.
That's not the world we live in. And the economic system is not set up that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to try and push things in the right direction from where we are now.
Mm.
I get a little bit frustrated when people use phrases like capitalism 2.0 because it almost sounds like you can throw away the one we've got and suddenly come out with a new version.
Yes.
And that's not actually, of course, what can happen. What has to happen is we need to evolve from where we are now.
Mm.
You can't just change things overnight. Mm. So how do you get people to aspire to doing something in a very different way, given the pressures they're under right now?
Mm-hmm.
And the stakeholders that they have to convince and so on and so forth. And that's why I landed on the view that actually we have to translate what the sustainable future looks like into a series of goals.
Mm-hmm.
Companies are good at aiming for goals.
Yes.
As long as they can measure and manage progress toward those goals. Mm-hmm. So that's what we've done. We've created this set of 21 future fit goals that together define the line in the sand that any company has to reach. And then we've defined these so-called key fitness indicators, or KFIs, which measure progress toward each goal as a simple percentage at the highest level, so that companies can actually start to prioritize and understand where their biggest performance gaps are and where they need to focus their efforts.
Mm. So why is it that, you know, we're still stuck in that other culture? I mean, I know we do need to evolve, but we're still asking questions of maintaining, sustaining, abstaining, when there's a radical obvious that we could be looking at.
There's a radical obvious to us as individuals. And I think even most CEOs, if you spoke to them off the record, would mm-hmm. say, I get this stuff. I get climate change. I get population expansion is, you know, going to result in ridiculously high demands in terms of fresh water, food, energy, and so on. As individuals, we get it. But we're operating within a system that is not supportive of change in the right direction. When CEOs are expected to predict their next course the earnings mm-hmm. in advance mm-hmm. For the benefit of investors, and when they're expected to come in very close to those predictions, ideally slightly ahead, but not too far ahead, mm-hmm. because then that sends the wrong signals to investors as well. We end up managing for certain levels of performance mm-hmm. rather than for where we ultimately think we need to be. And when the conversation is purely about financials, that's not driving the right behavior. So a good example is Tim Cook, Apple's mm-hmm. CEO, about 6 months ago, was challenged on one of the quarterly earnings calls by an institutional investor who said, will you commit to stopping your investment into renewable energy at your facilities? Because mm-hmm. we can't see any financial value in this. And Tim Cook turned around and said, well, no, actually, because I don't care whether you see any financial value in this. I'm paraphrasing. Because we think this is the right thing to do, and mm. that's why we're doing it. And mm. if you're not happy with the returns you're getting from your investment, then, you know, go elsewhere, which is great. Mm. But it's what's depressing is that he even had to justify why, as a company, they were investing in renewables when this investor, who's clearly very short-term thinking, was challenging him on whether that is necessary and whether that's eating into the dividends that he gets.
Interesting way of phrasing it, like this off the culture thing, like off the record thing, that we know that, and yet it's almost like we don't want to go on record when it comes to our business because there's this other parameter we need to play in.
Well,
we don't want to get radical there.
Well, I think if you look at some CEOs, some mm-hmm. progressive CEOs, Paul Polman is always cited as mm-hmm. an obvious example of Unilever. Mm-hmm. He talks about sustainability all the time.
Yes.
He lives and breathes it, and it's fantastic. You know, if every CEO in the world was thinking and acting like Paul, then we would probably be in much better shape than we are now. But even Polman says that as an organization, they're probably closer to 20% sustainable than 80% if you look at the entire value chain. And he says, despite all the good things they're trying to do in the world, he's still only 2 or 3 quarters of bad performance away from getting fired by the board. You know, no, the board isn't giving him extra latitude to take the company in a sustainable direction just because it's the right thing to do. He's still expected to deliver financial returns. So I think it takes a very bold and progressive CEO to take really transformative action and to be open about the need to do that while they're still expected to deliver these short-term returns. And that's the challenge we've got. And we need, if we really want to change how we do business, we've got to change how we value business.
Yes.
One of the things we're doing, as well as working with companies to say, look, if you're serious about being a leader rather than just being in the lead, then you've got to have a clear destination.
Yes.
That's on one side, and thankfully a lot of leading companies realize that this is where they need to go, so they're embracing that. But on the other side, we're also spending time talking to big institutional investors, people like pension funds, who manage billions, if not trillions of dollars, who have to take a long-term view.
Yes.
And if we can start to get them to understand what it is business has to do, when those guys ask the head of investor relations at a major corporation, what are you doing about water scarcity? What are you doing about renewable energy and so forth? Then the companies listen. Because if they don't, the potential is that their cost of capital is going to come up. And cost of capital is a very important thing to big companies in terms of funding expansion and so forth. So hopefully we can pull the companies in one direction and then push them from the institution investor side on the other, and maybe start a little bit of a snowball effect. That's the crazy plan anyway.
That's the crazy plan. Well, you're setting up the right infrastructure, looking at it from all the sides. Mm. And then I guess there's obviously then going to be the coaches or consultants that could then train through the organization who can hold that space. But then there's also going to be the framework of what does it mean to be a radical CEO or radical entrepreneur, to be able to think in this mind frame so that this becomes their obvious.
Yes.
Like filtering it down to that level.
Yeah. I think we've got to, as I say, a lot of people get this at an individual level.
Yes.
What we're trying to do is legitimize or help them to bring those individual views into the institution and help them to say, you know, this isn't what we think we need to do as a company.
Mm.
This is what the science says we need to do as a company. So here's what we're going to do about that. And a couple of the companies we've spoken to have said, actually, I'm talking to, you know, maybe heads of sustainability and so on. They've said the thing about the Future Fit Business Benchmark that's helped them is not that it tells them anything they didn't already know.
Yes.
It's that it articulates it in a simple enough way that they can get their CEO to pay attention to it.
Right. Beautiful.
So it's legitimizing the conversation and making it easier for them to have those elephant in the room discussions that they would otherwise struggle to have just because the whole thing is so complex.
And also then with an evolution of business models as well and business plans, it gives you the parameters to now restructure that, and you know what the goals are, you know what the framework is, and to be able to attribute the piece to the right part of it. The operation plan.
Yeah, I think an analogy here is in the world of product design. If you said to someone, if you said to a one of the world's leading designers or architects, you know, let's say, build me a building. Well, an architect's going to say, well, what kind of building? What's it going to be used for? Well, I need an office building. Okay, well, do you want a collaborative space? Do you want some, you know, there's all sorts of questions.
Yes.
All of those things, the designer is trying to understand the overall constraints within which he or she can deliver the best possible solution, right? And it's sometimes when we think of constraints or system conditions or principles within which we have to live, we think of them as a straitjacket. And that's absolutely not the case. If you don't know the rules of the game, how can you play the game effectively? So the Future Fit goals, really, yes, they're ambitious. Yes, you know, they're going to take a lot of leadership to hit some of these things because we need to change the way we do things. But actually, people that are looking at it the right way see them as very empowering because they can do anything they want to as long as it takes us in the right direction. That's the way to look at it rather than it being prescriptive about what you must do.
Curious, are they achievable?
Yes.
Oh, good.
They are. I would say, I think almost all, if not all, of the goals that we've got, we know of at least one or two companies in the world that have either already hit that level of performance. They might not be calling it Future Fit, but they've already hit that level of performance, or they publicly committed that they will do in the future. Now, of course, what gets challenging is, can one single company hit all of them at once?
Right?
So in some sectors, you might be doing very, very well on some of them, but you might really struggle on others. So, for example, if you're in the extractives industry, and let's say you're a fossil fuel company, right? You could be doing very, very well in terms of paying people in your supply chain a living wage, in terms of looking after communities and so on. Not every company is, but you could be doing very well and hitting Future Fit levels of performance there. But when it comes to your products emitting greenhouse gases, you've got a fundamental problem with your business
model.
Now, could an oil company survive into a sustainable future? Well, in theory, yes, but not as long as their business model relies upon burning stuff which escapes into the atmosphere. Now, if they could transform themselves into energy companies that captured that carbon, did something useful with it, or at least prevented it from being emitted into the atmosphere, then they could, in theory, meet that goal. The trouble we've got today is that fossil fuel companies are doing very little, in some cases nothing, to invest in technologies like carbon capture. So, you know, they might be doing great on 20 of the 21 goals, but that one goal is a killer. Right? And they will not gain their entry ticket to the sustainable future unless they actively work towards hitting that one as well. And it's, I don't want to paint fossil fuels as the problem sector, obviously we need fossil fuels and so forth. Yeah. But if they're not aiming to hit all of them, it's as good as nothing. There will be other sectors where certain other goals will be very difficult. For example, the fast fashion sector, actually ensuring that everyone in your supply chain is paid a living wage is a real challenge.
Yes.
And there are plenty of other examples of where particular goals might be very difficult to hit in particular sectors. But that's why the benchmark can help companies to figure out where their hotspots are in a way which then they can then figure out, well, how does our business model need to change to plug those gaps?
By the nature of the wording of it, the benchmark, does that mean you need to be hitting all of them to be there? Or is there like an entry level or certain thing that, like, okay, you're in the green zone or
so to speak. Yeah, we're not
bad color, maybe.
Yeah, we're not trying to. It's a good question. We're not trying to say, well, if you're at 60%, you're bronze or anything like that. What we're saying is basically we've got these 21 goals. You can measure progress toward each of them.
Mm-hmm.
We often hear the term in working in the sustainability world, triple bottom line, where we have to look after the financial dimension, or economic dimension, the social dimension, and the environmental dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds good, triple bottom line. You can see why it's a term that's caught on over the years. The challenge is that when it comes to the financial dimension, we know what the bottom line is. The bottom line is you break even. Because if you're losing money year after year, your shareholders aren't going to tolerate that very long.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's the equivalent break-even point for environmental and social?
Mm-hmm.
What's the point below which society should not be tolerating your long-term existence, and above which your shareholders or stakeholders are actually very happy?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what that threshold is, and that's what the Future Fit goals set out to define.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't expect, because of the nature of the way business is done today, and the 250 years of assumptions baked into our current economic system, no one is going to become future fit overnight.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, every company needs to hit every goal if it's to be part of a sustainable future.
Yes.
And some companies, it's important to realize that some companies are already doing a lot to positively contribute to society.
Hmm.
Think of a healthcare company. They're any company that's providing drugs that help people lead meaningful lives in developing countries where they otherwise wouldn't be able to support their families, for example, they are doing good in society.
Mm-hmm.
But if doing good means that they're actually having a very big negative impact in their operations, then how can you justify that? It's very easy if you're a business leader to pick the one thing that you're doing well and talk about that all the time and say, well, everything else is a cost of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the danger when you look at terminology like creating shared value, where the concept's great. What you do as a business, you can also see how that intersects with societal needs.
Mm-hmm.
And that intersection is the shared value that you're delivering.
Mm-hmm.
Nice concept. The challenge is the potential is there for a company, even if it's well-meaning, is to say, here's where we're creating shared value, and feel like that legitimizes all the other areas where they're actually having a negative effect.
Mm.
So the way we look at it is not a shared value, but a system value.
Mm.
What are you contributing to the system as a whole? And that might be a negative contribution, it might be a positive contribution. And you might be contributing positively in one area, such as providing drugs, but you might be having a negative contribution in other areas.
Mm.
And you've got to look at the whole thing overall. And ultimately, we need to get to a point where every company is at least breaking even and ideally generating a healthy, positive impact on at least one of those dimensions. And when we get to that point, the possibilities for a prosperous future are endless.
Mm. And just to confirm, by system, are you holding it at like ecosystem? So we're looking at internal, external?
The society, civilization is a system. Okay. Yeah. So obviously we live systems within systems.
Yes.
Your family is a system.
Mm-hmm.
Society is a system. A company is a system.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all very interconnected, nested. So, you know, no business can exist independently of a healthy society. And society can only itself be healthy if the natural process it depends upon are well-functioning and capable of meeting its needs. So we've got to live within these system conditions for what a sustainable future would have to look like. So yes, this is about what value are you contributing to the system, and that might have a financial element, probably should. But it also has to at least break even on the social dimension, not undermine or degrade our social fabric, and it mustn't in any way undermine our natural processes, and it might actually start to restore them.
One thing that you said earlier actually just made me want to laugh, and I'm wondering at ourselves, really, at humanity. You were just like, oh, did we just walk into this one? Because sometimes we look at corporates and they're saying sustainability, and we know that there's certain metrics for measuring that, but you know, whether or not they're sustainable, that's another question. But it's almost like a catch-22. They're saying it, and by saying it, they're not naturally having to be in integrity. So they're actually almost stepping into it.
Stepping into sustainability.
Stepping into sustainability in the sense that they can get called on it. So, you know, if they're putting up this great PR image, at some point they're going to have to start doing a little bit of the walk and the talk, and then they start doing a little bit more. But what you're also saying is that could just be the corporates, but you're actually, let's just look at this, all the sustainable brands, all the sustainable people. We're all actually doing the same thing that we're saying that the corporates are doing on all the different levels.
Yeah, I think
we've actually created our own catch-22, and we now need to step it up.
We, in the sustainability space, the consulting space, and environmentalists, NGOs, and so forth, I think we've fallen into the trap of not necessarily thinking in terms of the current economic paradigm, because there's lots of people pushing back against it, but in terms of maybe not thinking enough about how we bring people along with us. So when you hear people saying we need to stop growth, you're not going to get very far saying that to the average CEO, who basically will be out of a job if he were ever to say that to his investors. What we need to do is help people understand what growth should really mean, and it's not just about the financial side. And I think also in the sustainability space, where we fall into the trap of trying to define the business case for sustainability. And when people talk about that, I mean, the business case for sustainability is simply that if society as a whole is not sustainable, then your business cannot thrive. It might be okay for the next few years.
Yes.
Sooner or later, things are going to come back and bite. And, you know, the potential for negative impacts on society and civilization, if we carry on as we're going now, are unthinkable. That's a very good business case, but that's not what people mean. What people generally mean is, how is this going to make me money or save me money in the next 3 months? And as soon as you fall into that trap, you've got a real uphill battle to try and convince anyone in business, because the reality is some of this stuff is going to take investment.
Yes.
And some of it is going to have a much longer payback than 3 months. There are good examples, companies like Interface, carpet company, who have embraced and embedded sustainability into the whole way they do business for at least 15 years now. And their entire business and business model and success is grounded in doing things the right way. But that's because they had a CEO who was a real visionary and really got this stuff and pushed them in that direction. Now we've got to make other businesses or help other businesses catch up. And the interesting thing about the Interface example is that the kind of science, the system conditions that underpin the Future Fit Business benchmark are exactly what Interface used. It's the same science.
Oh, wow.
All we've done, luckily they had a CEO who also had a management team who invested a lot of time and effort in understanding what that meant, and working with the organization that came up with the science, the called the Natural Step, to figure out how to build their own plan around that, which they called Mission Zero. But that was specific to interface.
Mm.
It would be, unfortunately, we talked about, you know, whether in an ideal world, companies would just do the right thing because it's the right thing. But it would be naive in the world we live to think that every company will take the time and effort to understand this deep academic thinking and figure out all the systems theory to understand what do we need to do as a business. So that's all we've tried to do. We've just tried to bridge that gap.
Thank you.
So,
thank you.
Well, hopefully it will get somewhere. So, you know, we need the rigor of the science.
Yes.
But we also need to make that accessible so that the average CEO with very little time to spend on any one thing at once doesn't have to spend 3 days reading academic papers to actually understand how to apply it, but can actually say, yes, I get what those goals are. I get what needs to happen and why. And now I can put this all on a simple scorecard on a single slide that I can look at every 3 months and let people get on with it. So hopefully we can bridge the gap like that.
If you haven't done it anyway, you're on the verge of it.
Hope so. Touch wood.
Yeah. I'm just in awe, really, of what you created. And naturally it's going to evolve and progress as society evolves and progress. And, you know, this whole concept of sustainability is still something we're learning. We're still learning what is good for the planet. We obviously have clear ideas of some of the bad
things. It's interesting. This is why the system conditions. So the science we're talking about, I should probably mention in case anyone wants to look it up, is called the Framework for Strategic Sustainable Development. And it was created by a group of scientists around 25 years ago. The founder of the person behind the whole thing was a guy called Carl Henrik Robert, Swedish cancer surgeon. And as a cancer surgeon, he was used to diagnosing patients who came in with all sorts of weird symptoms. And just because someone's got a pain in a particular part of the body doesn't mean the cause is in that part of the body, because the body is a system. And when he started reading about environmentalism, he thought, this is crazy. We're kind of trying to deal with these things in isolated ways. We're using chemicals until we prove that they're toxic, rather than taking a more systems approach as to what are the system conditions within which we need to operate to sustain ourselves in the natural processes we rely upon. So he took that kind of systems thinking a step back, got a load of other scientists together, and came up with these originally four system conditions, three of them environmental, one of them social, but the social one has in recent years been unpacked into five kind of subconditions. So there's eight in all. And they collectively define exactly how we must operate for society to be sustainable. They will not change. Those conditions will not change, right? What will change is our understanding of how to live within them. So, for example, the metrics we've developed, we've used whatever third-party resources we can. So, for example, you know, I'm no expert on what responsible water stewardship looks like, but there are organizations such as the Water Footprint Network, the Alliance for Water Stewardship, who've got people who've lived and breathed this issue for, you know, years, decades, and we can take the best of what they've done and package it in a form that anyone can relate to. And we've done that for all these different issues. So all we've really done is, you know, collate and curate rather than create. And those metrics that we've come up with, we fully expect to not be as advanced and as easy to use as they should be. We've done our best to get what we might call a minimum viable product out the door, and now we're working with companies to stress test them. We believe that they can be refined over time and evolve into something much better, but they at least give you a starting point to start using this stuff. And some of the companies we've started working with have already said this is really helping them to change the way they make decisions.
That's such a critical thing as well. Just even in the context of sustainable brands, there's a lot of great talks, there's some great plenary conversations, some great actualizations in terms of what do we do with this, a lot of inspiration. But how now?
Yeah, literally, exactly. How now? Like, that's the theme of the event, right? What are we doing? Yeah, how do we actually embed this and operationalize this? And there's, you know, how now, it covers everything. It covers how do you engage your employees? How do you engage properly with your suppliers and all sorts of things? But
also how now for tomorrow.
Yeah, but it all comes down to do you have a clear destination to aim for? Do we as a society have a clear destination to aim for? Does everyone in the business have a clear destination to aim for?
Mm-hmm.
Can you be sure that when your guys in the R&D department are coming up with the next product or packaging or whatever it is, that they are at least trying to move in the right direction, right? Not because they would actively want to do anything bad, but do they actually know what good looks like? Mm. Do they actually know what they're trying to hit? Do they understand how their contribution is contributing to your business's ability to deliver this system value or not? And without a shared destination, it's kind of odd. In any other activity we do as people, we kind of don't set foot out of our front door before we know where we're going, right?
Uh-huh.
Where are you going to go? Well, that's going to govern what you pack in your bag,
what
you put a coat on, all this kind of stuff, right? There's no point in taking a first step until you know what the destination is.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been in this weird situation where with sustainability, we know we need to get better.
Mm.
We know we need to reduce our dependence on natural resources and the amount of waste we generate and so on and so forth. But we haven't had this clear sense of how much is enough.
Mm.
And without that clear destination to aim for and a way to assess progress toward it, there's a danger that every step you take, however well-meaning, is just kind of meandering about, not really getting us anywhere.
Mm. Sure. I mean, there's just as we start wrapping up, there's a room for innovation in terms of making up as we go along, but you know, we can't just keep spiraling and going, we'll be like an amoeba kind of floating through space,
right,
and not being able to move anywhere.
That's exactly it. I mean, innovation is one of those words that's often used as a solution.
Mm.
Right. Well, we need to innovate. Well, of course we need to innovate. But business has been innovating for years. I mean, the tobacco industry innovated for a long time in the development of cigarettes. Does that mean that innovation was intrinsically good? Of course not. It's just innovation is a process. What are you innovating towards?
Right. Yeah.
So all of these things we hear about, like circular economy and keeping resources in closed loops and products as a service and all of these good things, they're all just ways of helping to reduce our impact. But unless you've got that clear set of principles or goals to actually guide that innovation, you could be coming up with the next great thing, but it's not actually doing anything that takes in the right direction. Mm. So innovation is absolutely critical, and every step of the journey is going to require innovation. Some of these goals you'll be able to get to through continuous improvement. Step by step. Some of them are going to require discontinuous innovation, where you actually disrupt your current business model to do something completely different. But that's scary for some businesses to do. And if they don't do it, then someone else is going to come along and do it.
Yes.
And take their legs from under them. But at least now we have a kind of guiding star to say, well, what kinds of innovation are the right ones?
Mm. Well, Jeff, you've laid quite a gauntlet. I want to rise to this challenge. I want to make this happen.
Excellent. Good.
I want to be a voice that's playing in the space. So,
fantastic.
So thank you for throwing this in my corner.
Thank you for
setting the stage for that. And what's radically obvious right now is for anybody else who wants to know more about this is how do they connect with it? How do they find out where they are in the process?
Yeah, so our website is futurefitbusiness.org, one word. We're a UK-based non-profit. Everything we produce is published under a Creative Commons license. So free for anyone to download, use. You don't have to tell us you're using it. There's no obligation to talk publicly about its use. We would love to hear from anyone that uses it, because the more feedback we get, the more we can improve it. And yeah, just go ahead and download it and have a look. It goes into a lot of detail, hopefully in a easy to understand way, about why we need to do things differently and how we need to do them differently and how these future fit goals were derived. But it also gives guidance on how to conduct a future fit health check of your organization. So how do you start to look at your business model through the lens of these goals to see where your hotspots are? And that's the first step to having those difficult elephant in the room conversations that can hopefully guide your progress in the right direction.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.